Is he my prince? Is he the toad? Waiting, wondering, is getting too old. I'm gonna let down my hair, slide up my skirt. Get me up, be the biggest little flirt. Welcome to the Shame Free Zone with Veronica Monet, your friendly former sex worker and certified sexologist. The Shame Free Zone is a safe place for your questions and your secrets about all things sexual.
Hey, that's my good friend Susie Chin singing Shameless by her off of her album by the same name, actually. I haven't seen Susie in quite some time. She frequents the karaoke bars there in San Francisco, and she actually was the featured singer at my book party when Sex Secrets of Escorts came out in 2005. I did a podcast with her, actually, this last year. Very, very touching. Amazing story about her rape. Actually, if you just Google the Shame Free Zone and iTunes, you'll be able to bring up that program. I warn you, it's pretty heavy material. So, but if it's a topic that calls to you, you'll get a great deal out of it. I had a guest scheduled for tonight. Matter of fact, I promised you he'd be here tonight last week, and he's not. His name is Chief Philip Scott. We're going to have him back on the 13th of February. Right now, he's hopefully sleeping soundly, and I hope he went and got himself a bottle of oil of oregano like I recommended, but he came down with a really, really bad flu and just didn't have a voice today. So, and I called my backup guy, Eric, in Seattle. He's always a lot of fun. He's also got the flu. So tonight I'm going solo. Apparently that's just in the cards. And I've got a great topic for you. I've actually started a little bit of a dialogue on Facebook about it. And this is the question that I have for you. This is what's happening right now. I don't know if you saw today's headlines, but there's a high school student. She's a senior, and her name is Sydney Spies. She's in Durango, Colorado. And they rejected her photo for the school yearbook. So this was supposed to be her senior portrait. And it's a very interesting story. She's a very beautiful, beautiful young lady. She's 18. She's wearing this little black top that shows her midriff and bares her shoulders and a short yellow skirt. As photos go, I think it's very tasteful, and I certainly couldn't call it pornographic. She's not showing anything that you don't see when you're standing in line at the Safeway checkout counter. But there's this big flap about it in the news now. And as a matter of fact, if you just put in Sydney Spies, you're going to come up with a whole bunch of hits on your search browser. She's just went on the Today Show. It's over 3 million hits on it. And anyway, it's in the Los Angeles Times and Huffington Post. Global Christian Post, too. The Hollywood Gossip. It's everywhere. So if you haven't heard about Sydney Spies, you are not on top of today's news. Now, the reason I think this is a particularly interesting, aside from what she's trying to do, and I dare say she's probably going to get a reality TV show out of this now, I think she's an aspiring model. So the school book probably did her a great favor by refusing to rent her photo. But, you know, some of the words that they use, I've heard these words before, and I think it's very interesting. When a woman is told that her clothing is unacceptable, oftentimes what will be said is it's unprofessional and or inappropriate. And, you know, I get a little tired of this double speak, because the fact is, when somebody says to a woman she's being unprofessional or inappropriate, what they usually mean is that she's being slutty or whorish. I mean, that's just a fact. That's how people are thinking. And I could make this point pretty easily. You think about President Obama running shirtless on the beach, okay, bare-chested on the beach. Now, that photo goes all over the place. It winds up on magazine covers, newspapers, et cetera, et cetera. Not a word about it being unprofessional or inappropriate. In fact, the entire focus was on how young, healthy, fit, and virile the president is. I don't know. There might have been an obscure publication here or there that might have decried his bare-chestedness. I don't know. But for the vast majority of media commentary, it was all positive. And we see this over and over again. I mean, the double standard is alive and well. And, you know, we saw this in the years ago with Monica Lewinsky and Clinton when that whole sexual affair came out. Monica Lewinsky was the butt of a lot of jokes. It was very difficult for her to get work. As a matter of fact, she ended up having to travel to Europe to find employment. Meanwhile, President Bill Clinton's popularity rating went out the roof. He became a very, very popular president because he was associated with sexuality and virility. So that double standard is alive and well, and it might seem funny sometimes, something to laugh about, but I actually think it's a deadly serious topic. Because this brings us to something that's been around for a long, long time, and that's the whore Madonna complex. Now, some of you might be familiar with that term, and some of you might not be. I know it usually raises a lot of eyebrows when I talk about the whore Madonna complex. For one thing, the word whore really gets people's attention. I was on Bill Maher's Politically Incorrect show in 1998. That's been quite a while ago now. And I was on that show with, we had John Schneider from the original Dukes and Hazzard show. And Charo, might not be a name you're familiar with at all. And Howie Mandel, I'm sure you heard of him. He was on the show too. That was back when he still had a curly mop of hair. And I came on there as an out and still working prostitute. And the topic was decriminalization. Actually, legalization is often what people refer to it as. I make a huge distinction between legalization and decriminalization of prostitution, and I'll get to that in a minute. But when I was on the show, Michael Buffer, he announces a lot of the boxing matches, was he announced all of us, and he said, "And working girl Veronica Monet," and then he followed with his trademark, "Let's get ready to rumble." So it was a fun episode. It was lighthearted. We taped it in Las Vegas, and I think since they were in Nevada, which is the only state in the United States where prostitution exists legally, they decided to do a program about legalizing prostitution. So Howie Mandel says, "Oh, you're a hooker." And I said, "Well, yes, but I prefer to be called a whore." And, of course, everybody started laughing and applauding. It's just a really charged word, very, very charged word. And much to my chagrin, Bill Maher stopped using the word prostitute then and started using the word whore all the time. And he wasn't using it in a politically correct or enlightened way. He wasn't trying to reclaim that word and remove the onus of shame from it, which was very much my intention at the time. Instead, it just seemed like it kind of gave him a green light to be more denigrating and abusive in his conversations about women who provide sexual services for money. So, whatever. I learned, that was a lesson for me. Sometimes you got to explain what you mean when you use words. And in 2005, several years later, there was an international conference on prostitution in Montreal, Canada. I was working as a volunteer at that. Well, actually, I think I got paid. But anyway, I was facilitating workshops for this conference. And there were sex workers from everywhere. We had them from India and Germany and France, and most notably from New Zealand. Now, New Zealand in 2005 had just decriminalized prostitution. And I'll explain to you now the difference between legalizing and decriminalizing prostitution. Legalized prostitution is what you wind up with in, say, the state of Nevada. It's very prone to corruption and graft. Oftentimes, local politicians are paid off in order to procure the rights to open up a legal brothel. And it does not afford all prostitutes access to the protections of law. So people who are not working in the brothels still get arrested. They still oftentimes will get coerced or blackmailed into providing sexual services so they don't get arrested. And they're still really popular victims of violent crime, because of the fact that they're not a particularly protected population. Usually people who are working outside the law are the law's last priority. So if somebody beats you or rapes you or robs you, oh well, you know, you shouldn't have been breaking the law, is kind of how people think about that. The women who work in the brothels oftentimes are treated like cattle, and I mean that really literally. You know, a lot of people will brag about, well, the brothels force these women to get health checks, and then you know that they're not spreading disease. And that line of ill-fated logic is anything but logical. Let me explain why. If you tell a group of people that this population has been tested and they're disease-free, one of the first things that's going to result from that is a propensity for wanting to practice unsafe sex. So you actually increase the risk that a client is going to negotiate for condomless sex. And the argument goes something like this. So say the girl says, I need you to wear a condom, and he will say, I know you've been tested and you're clean, and I'll give you extra money if you don't wear the condom. This approach to stopping the spread of sexually transmitted infections, of course, ignores one half of the equation. So men also spread disease. Nobody's testing them. And consequently, now they're in a position to bargain for condomless sex and spread disease. Unfortunately, because we have these concepts of whore and slut, and a double standard prevails, it seems to affect our ability to understand simple biology. The fact is, if you put two genitals together, one or both of them can be diseased, one or both of them can spread disease, and if you're not protecting both of them, then you're an idiot. So that's the way the system's set up with legal prostitution. Sure, and they give lip service to the idea that the guys are supposed to use condoms. But let me ask you something. What's the point? If everybody's using condoms, why are we testing the girls? And why are we testing the girls and not the guys? What kind of sense does that make? It only makes one sense. It makes sense if you are approaching the prostitutes in the brothels as USDA-stamped approved meat. And that's really what it boils down to. It's USDA-stamped approved, which means, okay, this has been inspected, and it's safe for human consumption. It is, to me, just about as degrading and dehumanizing and also dangerous as the sex industry could possibly get. I've visited brothels. I've been out to the Mustang Ranch and the Old Bridge Ranch in Nevada, and I went there as a customer. I did. I went there with my husband. We actually paid a young lady for sex. We had a great time. It's wonderful if you happen to be the consumer. It's great. It's all geared towards you, towards servicing you, towards making you feel, you know, welcome and happy, and making sure that everybody caters to you. It's great. However, if you're thinking about the working conditions for the people who are employed there, I think it's atrocious. And I spent time speaking to the girl that whose services I retained afterwards to get some idea what her day-to-day life was like, and it was not a happy story. It made me very angry, and really helped me decide that I was definitely going to speak out against legalized brothels. So I am definitely for sexual services being a legal thing. I think whatever two consenting adults want to do is their business and it's nobody else's. I think it's ridiculous that the law wants to tell us who we can love, who we can have sex with, how, when, why. It's just insane. When you look at the Bill of Rights, we have a right to assemble. We have a right to worship. We have a right to freedom of speech and freedom of the press. And we have a right to vote. I mean, we have a lot of rights that are safeguarded. One thing we do not have, unless you want to try to fit this under the pursuit of happiness, is the right to have sex. We don't. That's why there's some really stupid laws that get passed from state to state. Just recently, the state of Texas had laws against owning more than 5 dildos. And then a test case went before the Supreme Court, and it was finally struck down. So now, just recently in the state of Texas, you are allowed to have more than 5 dildos in your possession. So why that law was there, I mean, I don't know. But, you know, that's how it is from state to state. There are laws on the books in certain states in this country which still make it against the law to perform oral sex, even on your husband or wife. So if not told otherwise, the state will try to enact laws that control your sexual behavior. And I think it's really important for us to start looking at the ways in which the laws curtail our sexual freedoms. And I think it's high time that we start demanding that we have a sexual bill of rights. I think it's time for us to be treated like adults. Adults who have the right to marry whoever we want to marry, love whoever we want to love, have sex with whomever we want to have sex with. Now, I say adults, and I think that's a really important distinction. I also think consenting adults is a very important distinction. So I'm certainly not endorsing sex between adults and minors, or sex between people who have the ability to consent and people who are compromised in some way, either mentally or physically unable to give their consent for some reason. You know, certainly somebody who is mentally retarded, we want them to be protected by the law. But we don't actually need new laws for that. Those kind of laws are already on the books. We just need to remove the laws that try to tell consenting adults what they can and can't do in the privacy of their homes. So anyway, back to this whole idea of sluts and whores. You know, as early as 1992, I was interviewed for an article in the Spectator magazine, which was a little sex magazine that was published out of Berkeley. And it actually had started off as the Berkeley Barb, and then it became Spectator magazine. And interestingly enough, in the early 90s, it was being edited by somebody by the name of Mickey Demarest. Mickey Demarest was the representative for the San Francisco chapter of the National Organization for Women. And in the early 90s, now, the National Organization for Women was actually endorsing sex workers and sex worker rights. Then around the middle 90s, I got invited on the Oprah Winfrey Show. Now, like an idiot, I didn't have a book to sell, and Oprah wasn't paying, so I declined, and I sent somebody else in my stead. And it turned out to be an incredibly positive show where Oprah had every woman in her audience stand up in favor of decriminalizing prostitution. And I wasn't there to be a part of that. I really felt stupid for saying no. Now, of course, I'd pay Oprah to be on anything that she was airing. But anyway, But I have a book now, too. So everything shifted. Everything shifted towards the end of the 90s and the beginning of the aughts. So by the time we're getting into 2000, we have a lot of hysteria around trafficking. Trafficking has become the new term. It used to be white slavery, and that's an obviously racist term. So now it's been replaced with trafficking. And absolutely trafficking exists. However, it is very difficult to make any case for the numbers that are being thrown about out there. We can thank, in large part, my dear friend Melissa Farley. I say that tongue-in-cheek. She and I have debated each other on numerous occasions. But Melissa Farley thinks that all prostitution is rape, and she has done some pseudo-research trying to prove that to be the case. And she's done a great deal of damage, in my opinion, twisting and distorting numbers and figures around the whole concept of trafficking. So if you're interested in getting a more balanced insight into that, I highly recommend that you check out Laura Augustine online. That's Laura Augustine, A-U-G-U-S-T-I-N. Laura Augustine has written extensively, researched extensively on the topic of trafficking, and she takes trafficking to be exactly what it was meant to be, anybody doing any kind of work against their will who has been, you know, transported across national borders and is usually indentured or working in a conditions that are kind of slave-like. So it doesn't have to be sex work. Unfortunately, we've gotten really hysterical around trafficking, and we now almost think of that as being exclusively about prostitution, and almost all prostitution has gotten conflated with trafficking. So it's very difficult for people to think about women who could possibly choose that as a profession or be empowered in any way, shape, or form. But anyway, as I started to say, I was interviewed for this article and in the Spectator magazine, and I came out and said, I am a slut. And I had developed an acronym for the word slut, and this is what it is. So slut, S-L-U-T-S, sluts, actually plural. Sexually liberated, unique, talented sisters, sluts. I liked that. I liked the idea of taking a word as being, you know, used to make women feel ashamed, control women's behavior, and turn it on its ear and make it something that we could proclaim proudly and defiantly. I think many movements have done that with words that have been used to oppress. Certainly the words queer and gay have been reclaimed in that manner, and I think there's room to reclaim words like whore and slut as well. So in 2005, when we were in the Montreal conference for prostitution, I was in a small room with my friend Robin Few and Stacy Swim, and the three of us are actually advocates, activists for an organization called Sex Worker Outreach Project, and we were in a hotel room trying to dream up an acronym for the word whore. And what we came up with and what was eventually emblazoned on our T-shirts for the word whore was, we honor ourselves with respect and empowerment. Whore. So, you know, this business of reclaiming words can be a very powerful thing. I remember one time I was giving a presentation at a community college. It was a women's studies group, and the female professor of that group said that during the 60s she had become an honorary lesbian as a show of solidarity for the women in her a feminist group. And after hearing me talk about sex worker rights, she said she felt very much that she wanted to become an honorary whore. And I'd like to invite all of you that are listening to this right now to think about the idea of what would it mean for you to become an honorary whore? And how is it that you would be trying to reclaim that word so that it's not so onerous and it doesn't put women in danger. Because, you know, really, all kidding aside, what's really seriously at stake here are women's lives. Now, just recently, December 17th, we had yet another International Day of Remembrance for sex workers. This is something we started quite a few years ago in San Francisco. I was in attendance at the very first one. And it's an occasion when we get together to remember prostitutes who have been murdered. And it's very, very painful for me that we live in a culture nowadays where we still tell dead hooker jokes. I can think of several times when I've tuned into my favorite comedy news show, Jon Stewart's Daily Show, to hear him tell a dead hooker joke. And it's very sad to me, but it's also very common. Very, very common. People still think that's really funny to talk about dead hookers. Why it's not funny to me, of course, is because I know real prostitutes, and they're people. A lot of times they have husbands, wives, children, parents, lives of value. They might actually be doing things that people who are against sex work would value, working for political causes, trying to make a positive impact on the planet. That's not usually our stereotype about sex workers, and this speaks very much to the whore Madonna complex. So let's talk about that a little bit in more depth here. I know that I tuned into a CNN Presents right at the end of 2011, and I think they were playing it on New Year's Eve. It was narrated by Sigourney Weaver. Apparently the show had actually aired in 2005, so it was a rerun. The title of it was The Two Marys. And, you know, when I hear about The Two Marys, I always think about the whore Madonna complex, because this is really where it originates from. If you look at historical references to female archetypes before we come up with the Virgin Mary and Mary Magdalene, they tend to be a combination of maternal and sexual characteristics. And a lot of the deities tend to have those attributes. They're not neutered. They're not asexual. They certainly are not virgins. And they're very powerful, very, very powerful female icons. But with the advent of the two Marys, Mary Magdalene and the Virgin Mary, we enter a phase in history when women are really called upon to sort themselves out as either good girls or bad girls. There's very little crossover. And I think it's really, really painful for a lot of women because this ancient dichotomy seems to drive a stake right through the heart of womanhood by compelling anyone with a vagina to pick a side and declare themselves to be either aligned with good or evil. And author of Mary, A Flesh and Blood Biography of the Virgin Mary, her name is Leslie Hazelton. She's quoted as saying, "I think there was a very strong felt need on the part of the church fathers to put women in their place. So by dividing women into Madonnas and whores, they could either be all good or all evil." Now, I actually object to the idea that being sexual is evil. I think that's a really pessimistic, sad commentary on our current state of affairs. Certainly, sex is a good thing. How could it not be a good thing? You know, it's pleasurable. It provides orgasms. Orgasms are great for your health. Sex creates life. We claim to value life. Especially human life, so I can't imagine why sex would be a bad thing. Therefore, a woman who is sexual should also be good, absolutely good. But even in our languaging, when we start to have this conversation, there are some old ways of thinking which are incredibly infectious. So we've got this whole idea that the good woman doesn't have sex, she's a virgin, and the bad woman, the evil woman, is sexual. And of course, you know, you've probably seen that bumper sticker, good girls go to heaven, bad girls go go everywhere. So, you know, we find ways to play and have fun with that concept. But it's not really a laughing matter, being, you know, putting sexual women into the camp of being evil. So now what is going to happen to Sydney Spies, this senior from Durango, this high school in Colorado? Obviously, she's probably going to get quite a bit of press, I would think, and she might even get a career out of it. I don't know. But she runs the risk of simply getting a lot of press and then being dismissed as a slut. We seem to have such strong divisions. It's kind of hard for us to imagine a girl who is sexy and smart. Very difficult for us to put those two together. Just as it's very difficult for us to think that mothers can be sexy. They can be sexy in an understated way, but they shouldn't be obviously sexy. So we complain an awful lot about other cultures where women are, you know, required to cover up and to wear certain clothing. And I always get it's a laugh to me, a little bit of a laugh, because I look at the culture that we have in this country, and I see all the ways in which women are constrained and controlled and condemned based upon how they dress. It's such a waste of energy. You know, what's important is what people do, the energy that they're putting out into the world, their intention, what's in their hearts. So, so, so important. But because of the way women dress, we will make instantaneous judgments about them. And yes, some of that applies to men as well. You know, a rich man versus a poor man. There's a lot of clothing that men are not allowed to wear because we would deem them to be too gay, whatever that means. You know, usually that means he has taste. So that's very unfortunate, too, for any man who actually likes to dress well, that he might be able, you know, to get labeled gay. But although those kind of constraints do apply to men on a much smaller scale, what it does to women's lives is almost debilitating. Women spend way too much of their time and energy trying to sort themselves out according to good girls and bad girls. And they also spend way too much energy trying to figure out if they are pretty or sexy. It's a real catch-22. Lots and lots of women expending tons and tons of energy trying to be whatever they think the culture deems attractive and sexually viable, while at the same time trying to play down those characteristics so that they don't appear to be too loose or too slutty or too whorish. So, you know, one of the questions that I asked on Facebook was just, what does the word whore mean to you? And, you know, I think it means different things to different people. I've certainly asked this question in classrooms before and found that some people thought it was a joke. Now, interestingly enough, most of the people who think the word whore is a joke tend to have penises. It becomes like, oh, yeah, somebody called me a man whore. That's really funny. Usually, women aren't quite so cavalier about that term. Now, I think there's definitely generational differences. Use that word around somebody my mother's age. You know, she's in her 70s. She would be utterly horrified. However, if you use that word, you know, for somebody who's maybe in their 20s, it might be kind of funny up to a point, but contextually, not necessarily. So one of the questions that I ask college students a lot of times is, what if, you know, when was the last time that somebody called you a whore, and how did it feel? And, you know, the room usually gets really, really quiet when women are thinking about being called whore. So guys might laugh about it. Girls tend to get pretty serious about it because it's not particularly funny. So I asked people, I said, what does the word whore mean to you? Do you use the word? If so, when and why? Has anyone ever called you a whore? If so, how did you respond? How did it make you feel? So just giving you a little idea of what's being said on Facebook tonight in answer to my question. We've got Terry Jean says, I've been called worse. Beth Allison says, whore is used now for prostitute and for women who are promiscuous. I have been called a whore and my feelings were hurt. I felt judged. It was another woman calling me this. Angel says, by the way, Veronica, I would not allow a word to define me. It only has the power I would choose to give it, which is nothing. Good for you, Angel. Ross says, I use it all the time in a completely non-gender, non-sexual way to refer to people who sell out their values. That is, by the way, the dictionary definition of prostitute, somebody who has sold their services for an ill purpose. Angel once again says, it is a word people who are afraid of the female goddess use to disguise their ignorance. Angel and I are kind of on the same wavelength here. Siva says, whore to me is the slang word for a prostitute. I see almost all females as a whore due to the society we live in. Wow, Siva, that's really upbeat. And Angel's got to come back for Siva. She says, Siva, let us say you seem to be of the ignorant variety of pricks. Okay, I'm sorry. I just had to read that because, I mean, it really does highlight how one-sided this word is. Women are at the butt of this type of verbal onslaught, and really, there isn't a word that's commensurate with it. There isn't a word that has the same debilitating effect on men. So she's calling him a prick. He's probably laughing that off, but anyway... I'm not going to read the rest of what Angel said. Suffice to say, she put Siva in his place. Let's go over and see what folks had to say about Sydney Spies, the Colorado teen. Should she be allowed to use a photo of herself in a skimpy top and short skirt as her senior photo for the high school yearbook? And why do we care so much what women wear anyway? So we had Lanai says, if it's who she is, who is she? What exactly is this saying? That's the question. Beth says, no, I don't. She is not a woman. She is an over-sexualized girl. The pose was provocative as well. Beth also says, adults can do and wear what they wish. Martha says, sure, why not? No matter what she wears, she'll be mortified at her reunion anyway. Besides, the yearbook apparently can be bought with a $300 ad. And yes, Martha, they did end up running her photo when she paid $300 to do it, which kind of begs the question, who is the whore here? Aspasia says, I didn't want to be in my yearbook at all. And Namit says, yes, I do. It baffles me that this has... Hi, Namit, by the way. He's a really good friend of mine. Namit says, yes, I do. It baffles me that this has become the story it has. How can we make fun of the Taliban for all their views on how women should dress and get puritanical of a story like this? She is an adult and should be able to do whatever she wants. And by the way, she is an adult, Beth. She's 18. So I think that by definition, that does make her a woman. Maybe she's not as much a woman as she'll be years to come from now, but she's old enough to vote, and that would seem that she ought to be old enough to wear whatever she wants. But anyway, I'm not really interested in getting into whether or not yearbooks should have certain types of photos in them. What's particularly disturbing to me is how we continue this double speak so that we don't get honest about what our values are in this culture. Using code words like unprofessional and inappropriate when what you really mean to say is that somebody looks like a slut or a whore to you hides the prejudice and the hate that is behind those words. And it is prejudice, and it is hateful, as far as I'm concerned. And one of the reasons is that when you think that a woman's worth is contingent upon the way that she dresses, then if she dresses a certain way, she deserves whatever she gets. You know, you can think about the Canadian constable who felt that women shouldn't dress a certain way if they don't want to get raped. That was the big thing. Last year we had the slut walks. I don't know if you caught that or not. It was kind of a big thing. It started in April and went for most of the year. Slut walks actually kind of took the world by storm. They went all around the world, and women were taking to the streets to protest the very idea that somehow or another the way a woman dresses would legitimize her getting raped. And some rape survivors were out picketing, talking about how they were raped while they were wearing their ski clothes, sick in their pajamas. I mean, just, it was very sad. And I think also a really important point, because here it is at this time, it was 2011, and some people in positions of authority still think that women get what they deserve based upon what they wear. I agree with Namit. That's very much like the Taliban as far as I'm concerned. And here it is taking place in this country. Now, granted, we're not beating women over the head for exposing their ankles, but we are condemning women based upon how they dress. Let's look at the presidential race, 3 years ago when Hillary Clinton was running for office. I am not at all interested in whether or not any of us were for her or against her or wanted to vote for her. It's not the point. The point to me is that here was one of the first serious female presidential candidates. And she was mercilessly attacked based upon her appearance and her clothing. I can remember being in the waiting room of a Firestone dealer where I was getting my tires changed or buying new tires for the car, something like that. And on the morning news was this program. It was like 20 minutes long analyzing Hillary Clinton's lack of fashion sense. And they went all the way back to the 60s analyzing her hairstyle and her makeup and her clothes and just making a really huge production of it. Now, you could think that's just a fluff piece and it's relatively harmless. But then when she was running for the Senate and, to become the New York senator, Larry King ran an entire hour program about Hillary Clinton's butt and her thighs. He had experts on there, so-called experts. I don't know where you get these experts, to talk about whether or not Hillary Clinton's thighs and butt were going to have anything to do with her election to the Senate. And then you fast forward to her presidential race, and we saw conversations, and it was all over the papers, about this, I don't know, cleavage gate. For lack of a better word, I'll call it cleavage gate. So I looked at the pictures. I never did see Hillary Clinton's cleavage, but rumor had it that because she was wearing a neckline that showed a little bit of her chest, that somehow or another she was exposing her cleavage. That same year, Larry King had another program. Apparently he just loves picking on Hillary, had another program devoted to whether or not we were ready to see a woman age in the White House. So apparently men can grow old in front of our eyes, and they just become more worthy of our respect and trust, and they accrue character with each gray hair. But the idea that a woman might get lines on her face was something that could possibly shape our decision to even vote her into office. So really, in 2012, my question to all of us is, how far have we really come? How far have we really come when women are still being defined by what they wear and how they wear it and who they have sex with and why they have sex with those people? How is it that we were ever going to take this conversation to a place where women are valued as human beings with depth and dimension to them? It's I don't believe the answer is to neuter women. This is what the feminist movement, second wave feminists, really tried hard to get away from misogynistic and one-dimensional approaches towards females. But I think that we went wrong with that, and I say we because I was born in 1960. That makes me 51 years old. I definitely, chronologically, should be part of the second wave feminist movement, and I certainly cut my teeth on the second wave feminist movement. That was what I was, involved in when I was in college. Very definitely. But as I have aged, I have felt myself much more aligned with the third wave feminist, which third wave feminism is much more sex positive, usually embraces the idea that women have a right to choose how they want to have sex and what they want to wear and how they want to expose themselves or what professions they may want to choose, and usually are much more likely to think that women can be strippers and prostitutes if they want to be. Second wave feminism believes that there's only one way to have sex politically correct, and so we should all take off our high heels and our makeup and try to be as unisex as possible. I went through that stage. I think it's very liberating. It's wonderful, to get away from the idea that you are expected to dress or behave in any way. So if you are living chained to makeup and high heels and feeling like you've got to flirt with girls and because, Katy Perry kissed a girl and your boyfriend thinks it's hot, I think that's just as much of a burden as feeling like you've got to somehow or another live up to the Virgin Mary standards of femininity. I would like to see us here, 2012, guys, 2012. Oh, I thought we'd be so much further than we are. I'd love to see us moving to a stage where women can move in and out of these things without it defining them. And if a woman wants to work in the sex industry because it sounds like an exciting thing to do and then at some point move on to something else, I mean, witness the Secret Diary of a Call Girl. I don't know that woman could have gone from being a escort to being a professor and a research scientist in this country. She lives in the UK, thank God, because I think in this country we're too puritanical. They'd probably drum her right out of the halls of academe. And by the way, if you haven't seen the show, check it out. It's a series on Showtime. It's called Secret Diary of a Call Girl. It's based on a blog by the same name. And it's true to life. This woman actually lived most of these stories. Obviously it's been adapted for TV. But as somebody who comes from the industry, I can attest to its authenticity. I was delighted by the show. A lot of people said it glamorizes the industry. Not from where I saw it. It was actually just kind of average middle-class prostitution. Nothing particularly glamorous about it. And I'm sorry to disappoint anybody who thinks that the life of your average middle-class prostitute is degrading, because it's not. Obviously, there are people who are being degraded in prostitution, just as there are people who are being degraded in marriage. And if all I had ever seen about marriage was the fallout that landed up in the domestic violence shelter that I volunteered for in 1982 on the Oregon State University campus, I'd want to pass a law against marriage. But fortunately, I have met some people who are happily married, and I myself have been happily married. So I think marriage can be good. It can be evil. It really depends on who's doing it and how they're doing it. And sex work is really no different. It's just people. Some people do it for good reasons. Some people do it for poor reasons. Some people do it for a little of both. And wherever people are involved, you're going to get good and bad results, negative and positive. But it doesn't pay for us to have prejudices of any kind. And I really hope that we can start moving into a world where women have freedom. I think it's really important for us to have our freedom to express ourselves any way we choose. And when that comes to our appearance, our sex lives. I would love to see a world with much more diversity. So I'm all for the choice and to be able to move in and out of those things with freedom and joy and do what calls to you at that time. You know, they say that the colors that you wear have a lot to do with your energy, your mood, your creativity, your prosperity. There are entire arts devoted to helping people choose the right colors and arrange their rooms in the right way to really help accentuate who they are in the world. And if you think about the way men and women adorn themselves as being just another way of accentuating their creativity, their prosperity, their joy, and their individuality, then I think that's the best possible use of clothing and appearance. And if, you know, our focus is going to be on how we can try to get approval from other people, then whether we're trying to be the Virgin Mary or we're trying to be the repentant Mary Magdalene, or maybe we're trying to be the rebellious whore, that's usually going to fall short because it's not coming from an authentic center. And you might be reacting against or to certain forces instead of just expressing yourself freely. But that's not really a judgment call that we get to make for each other. So we need to give each other the benefit of the doubt, I think, and the freedom to experiment and expand. And God, I hope someday we actually do get a female president, and God bless her if she shows up with some cleavage. Next week, oh, by the way, if you have any comments about this program and you want to email me, I'm all ears. I'm working on an e-book right now, and who knows, I may write a response to your comments and questions, and it might wind up in my electronic book, and if that's the case, I'd be happy to send you a free copy of it. My email is veronica@sexwithoutshame.com. That's veronica@sexwithoutshame.com, and you can always find my credentials and services over at www.theshamefreezone.com. That's theshamefreezone.com. Next week, I'm going to be interviewing Jackie Lapin. Jackie's got a brand new book. It's called Practical Conscious Creation, and it anchors the law of attraction and conscious manifesting techniques, tools, and practices into your daily life. So I hope you're going to tune in, and we will try to give you some tools to really catapult you into an abundant, prosperous, joyful 2012. Thanks so much for tuning into the Shame Free Zone, and I will check in with you next Monday.
Thank you for tuning in tonight. If you liked what you heard and you want more solutions for your love life, please call me toll-free at 888-903-0050. Once again, that number is 888-903-0050. I am the only person who answers that line, and I am usually available Monday through Friday from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. Pacific Time. You can also visit sexwithoutshame.com to discover more of what I can do for you. And remember, your secret is safe with you. Sering kesepian, kenapa tak mutus kabar berita?